This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Today on Tech Talk, I'm speaking to Dr. Chachi Teng, the Associate Professor of Information Technology and Cybersecurity at Brigham Young University in Utah, USA, on matters such as the evolution of cybersecurity, computer vision, machine learning, and also cybersecurity curriculum for educators. Dr. Teng, welcome to the show. Perhaps, you know, an introduction.
My name is Chachi Teng. I am an associate professor at Brigham Young University at Utah, United States, focus on information technology and cybersecurity. I've been teaching for about 12 years, and before that, I was in software research development at Microsoft for about 17 years, mostly working on Windows. Right. I'm sure you heard of it. So, I'm passionate about creativity, and I'm passionate about helping the young people to get into STEM majors and find their passion and make a difference.
And it is like the essence of, I guess, the future when you talk about, you know, the STEM education itself. Mm-hmm. That is pretty much the essence of where our future is going to be. The reliance of, you know, technology, at least, you know, it's now seeped into so many factors or facets of our lives. And I also understand that, you know, your research areas include computer vision, machine learning, healthcare technology, virtual and mixed reality, mobile and cloud applications, and also cybersecurity. And that's, you know, encompassing a lot of areas in the, you know, the technology world itself. But I guess I want to start with the cybersecurity space.
Of course.
You know, what sort of challenges that we're facing at the moment? You know, 12 years, you know, you've been in the education sector. What do you see as like the biggest issue that we have at the moment with cybersecurity?
I think globally, I would say the first biggest problem is still the general public awareness, right? A lot of people still don't understand what the threats really are and what kind of risk carries when they do something, right? And then they will still click on email links. They will still download stuff on their phone apps and not realizing the potential consequences. And then that's one thing. I think the public just need to be more aware and then ask the right questions. I think that when the public asks the right questions and push for some policy change, that's when it will happen, right? And that brings me to the next point, which is the policy. I think that's another one of the biggest problem is that not just here, but United States as well, and globally, international relationship, the rule of engagement when it comes to cyber engagement or, you know, I don't want to say warfare, but in essence, that is the case, right? That's kind of the forefront of the international engagement right now. Just recently, you know, Iran bring down the U.S. drone, right? And then that whole engagement basically become a cyber engagement. And what is the rule? I mean, nobody really knows, right? And what is the potential consequences? Nobody really know. That makes a lot of people nervous, and me included.
And we've seen the effects that, you know, the lack of awareness in cybersecurity, you know, with, you know, whether it's on politics, whether it's on businesses. We've seen, you know, companies, large companies, the Sonys of the world that have been, you know, hacked, and to even the smaller companies that may not have been in the news, but because they're too small, but they've, you know, been affected by cybersecurity elements and thus, you know, probably going out of business.
Yes.
And yet, you know, as you mentioned, your first point is there is that still that gap. Why haven't we closed that gap? Because, you know, that digital world is not like something that's the future.
Yeah.
Everyone wakes up and everything's digital from the moment you get up till the moment you sleep. Even probably when you're asleep, you're in some, you know, digital aspect where, you know, you're tracking your sleep and stuff like that.
Yeah. I think in some ways that people just feel like there's not much they can do, right? They kind of feel powerless, so they just kind of give up, right? But I think that's a very dangerous way of thinking, right? There really is a lot of things that people can do, especially business owner that you were talking about, right? You do, you know, regular backups, right? You install anti-malware packages, right? And you do regular upgrades, updates on patches that come out, right? Oh, these are all very standard, obvious things, but a lot of people just don't even do that, right? That's when you get into trouble,
Right? But cybersecurity is not sexy. That's why, it's difficult.
Yeah, I told my students, right, cybersecurity is a thankless job, right? When everything works, nobody care about you. But when things break, people knock on your door and your phone starts ringing and in the middle of the night.
It's the afterthought.
Yeah.
It's always been the afterthought. And that's a huge risk because, one of the areas that we're seeing on the rise is, artificial intelligence and machine learning, right? And, it has an impact to society and, with the amount of data that it's gathering to improve our daily lives. What's your take with just the rise of artificial intelligence?
Well, there's like almost every technology, there's positive and negatives, right? The obvious positives that there's so much power brought to the scientific research community. They're solving big problems that they weren't able to solve before because, like you said, the amount of data, now we actually have the sufficient computation power and the software package and ability to kind of make sense of all the data. Like, you're talking about geoscience, you're talking about environmental science, even freshwater management, right? There's just so much data. Now they can actually do something and make a difference and make the world more sustainable and prevent disasters in the future. But the negative downsides, to me, the most worrisome is that the kind of hidden, invisible influence that nobody think about, but it's like everywhere, right? If you think about AI in our life, well, the most obvious thing, right, it's the consuming behavior, right? It, like you go to the website, you click on something, then it's just kind of bombarded with those subliminal messages that push you to certain purchase decision, right? That's all AI, right? And not just in consumer, like in a political campaign, right? This happened a few years ago in the United States, right? The Cambridge Analytica, right? Got Facebook data and then influenced the political campaign in some ways. But that is the danger that we're running into. And there are other instances where the social bias get introduced by, quote unquote AI, right? Because, they're doing AI recruiting now and your resume get filtered by the machine algorithm before you even see a human, right? And then plenty of instances where the social bias just kind of automatically get built in, right? Even company now, like Amazon, come out and say, hey, we don't do AI recruiting anymore because it's just flawed, right? So there are a lot of those, I would call them like hidden invisible influences. That's the real danger because we don't see it. And to the point where at some point we will kind of lose our ability to self-determination in a way, right? Because we're kind of immersed in those subliminal messages that, push us to where we want to go.
And some would argue that perhaps, that kind of subliminal messages that artificial has helped us has made us a little bit more efficient, has made us to know ourselves a little bit better because we're always set on the fence. So it's for some people, you'll be always sitting on the fence. These kind of, data mining and algorithms have helped people to find their path. At least is that really just a way of masking out, like that it's actually dangerous because you're not knowing yourself on your own. You're relying on tech, and these are owned by an individuals or companies to guide you to your own thoughts and beliefs.
That's absolutely, and companies totally have their own agenda, right? So you're exactly right.
And let's talk about like the talent pool then. You've spoken about the big companies like Amazon, and we hear a lot about there's a need for upskilling, there's a need for reskilling because the rise of automation and industry 4.0 will have an effect. It's the new revolution. We've seen it with steam. We've seen it with combustion engines, and then with the internet. And this, the next one, the industrial revolution 4.0, will see another wave where jobs are at risk, and a lot of things will be automated. Is this whole talk about upskilling and reskilling just a bandage over the issue, saying that this is just something that you got to do? Don't worry, you'll be fine. But there is actually a huge risk of, people really have to do something here.
Absolutely. How do you make yourself not expendable when the technology evolves, right? I always tell my students that the greatest thing you can learn in college is the ability to think critically, the ability to analyze problem, ability to come up with creative solutions, regardless of technology, right? Because technology will change. Even for programmer, people just think, oh, you're a programmer, you know, you don't have to learn anything. That's totally untrue, right? New software platform languages come out every 3 to 5 years. You have to relearn the whole thing, right?
Programmers can be out of job as well.
Oh, yes, absolutely. You know, the skill changes and become obsolete all the time. But the ability to think critically, that will never change. People always need that, right? Mm. Ability to analyze critical problems and come up with creative solutions. If you have those things, right, doesn't matter how the technology evolves, you will be important. You will make an important role in whatever position that you're in, right? Skill can be learned, right? Process can be trained. But the way to think critically, that's a little bit difficult to come by, right? To me, that's the most important thing.
And the education sector is probably the one sector that has been around for decades. Yes. Now, it's probably one of the oldest sector,
yeah,
but also one of the slowest to adopt technology.
Absolutely. I think, you know, I grew up in Taiwan, right? I think most of the Asian countries, I hate to say this, but just have this pitfall where the education is so much test oriented, right? That's how I grew up as well. You know, if your education and your learning experience become test-focused, test-driven, then you kind of lose that part of critical thinking and analysis and creative solution, right? Mm. And that's kind of, to me, where the U.S. Western style of education still have their strength is that part, right? They're not so much of that, you know, test-driven, and they always encourage kids to come up, you know, think outside the box. And even at where I teach right now, I see international students from all over the world, right? And you know, those Asian graduate students that come here, I can see the difference how they approach problems, right? Sometimes I give them open-ended problems. They just kind of freeze and don't know what to do. They said, okay, what's the solution? I said, well, no, they say, what's the correct answer? I said, there is no correct answer. I said, how can there be no correct answer, right?
Okay, there should be a yes
or
a no.
Yeah, where's the end, right? I said, there is no end, right? And I think that's, to a certain degree, the Asian-style education had failed us, right, and has not realized that they need to make a change, mm-hmm. right? And then, to a certain degree, Malaysia prep education is like that. Taiwanese prep education is like that. And I think if we don't fix that,
it's
culture is not going to change.
Yeah. And I guess that's, you know, we're at risk of falling behind because of the speed. You know, it takes what, 3-4 years to get a degree.
Yeah.
And in 3-4 years in technology sense, that's, you know, probably a decade. And by the time you graduate.
Absolutely. Yeah. If you're whole education learning experience is test driven, you end up learning skills, mm-hmm. right? And you're not learning the things that I feel is important, is the critical thinking, is the analysis and creative solution, right? And that's how, you know, students become feel like they can be out of place after a few years.
I'm speaking to Dr. Chachi Teng, the Associate Professor of Information Technology and Cybersecurity at Brigham Young University, and we'll continue in just a moment. BFM 89.9.
Boring, fake, macho. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
And we're back. My name is Jeff Sandhu, and my guest for today is Dr. Teng from Brigham Young University. And we're talking about everything cyber-related today. And Dr. Teng, one of the other areas that you research on is the healthcare sector, which is another sector where tech has really made its way, you know, from doctors using artificial intelligence to scan patients' records and, you know, to DNA hacking like CRISPR. What's your take with using technology in the healthcare industry?
So I consult some companies that, you know, use artificial intelligence in the healthcare domain. Some of them are really making significant progress, make processes that used to take a long time because they're so manual labor intensive. Now they're using computer algorithm to do some initial work and to make the whole process faster. They're not replacing human, right? That's kind of a misconception. A lot of people are worried and scared about AI is that they're going to replace human. But I don't think we're there yet, right? Where the whole purpose is to have machine and human work together to make the process much more efficient, accurate, and low cost, right? That's I mean, everybody would want that, right? And one of the things that we were talking about earlier is education. One of the key points that I observed when I was doing my research in Taiwan on my Fulbright grant was that I found that the topic of ethics is missing in a lot of those computing discipline in Taiwan. And when I was talking to a professor here in computer science in University of Malaysia, they kind of feel the same way, that there's just not enough emphasis on ethics and the policy type implication of whatever software decisions you make, right? I think that's what needs to happen is that when technology students get educated, they need to have some foundation on the ethical impacts of whatever they do, right? Because they're, like you said earlier, they're changing the world. But if they don't have that ethical foundation and when they solve problem, they do a certain way, not realizing the potential impact, that's really a dangerous road, right, where we're going. In the United States, almost most of the computing disciplines, they actually require an ethics class, right, before you graduate. And I think that's something that needs to happen here, like in other countries as well, and mostly Asian countries, that students works on technology needs to have some kind of ethics background so they realize that, oh, what are the social implications, right?
And you know, just going to the extreme of healthcare technology, you know, going back to CRISPR and DNA hacking, you know, we've seen in China, I think, you know, of gene-edited babies. and recently, I think the World Health Organization came out and said that it is banned, you know, for any progress in gene-edited babies. But there is still, you know, like you said, there is the pros and cons. And the pros is, you know, there will be probably a use cases of helping, you know, babies in the future to not carry certain diseases and stuff. And how do we find that line? Because it comes down to the individual, and if that person has a malicious intent, it's really hard to stop.
That's a great question. I'm afraid I don't have the answer, right? If I had the answer, I'd probably win Nobel Peace Prize. but the good thing is, this question's a lot of people are asking now, right? Like I was talking about in the beginning, general awareness, right? The good thing is people are asking. And a lot of smart people are getting together and start discussing, okay, what should we do from here, right? Internationally, as well as in the research community. Like I belong to a society called IEEE, which is the electrical engineering and computer science as well. And they started a working group a few years ago to kind of figure out, you know, what guideline do we give, right, for engineers, right? And as well, and European Union have a similar organization called, I think it's called AI for People, right? And a lot of researchers and academic and industry come together and start discussing the ethical ramification of these kind of things, right? I don't have the answer, but I think you're right. It's kind of scary. Right. And I think research in a way is okay. I mean, to me, knowledge is knowledge, right? There's you're learning new knowledge and there's nothing wrong with learning new knowledge, right? And I always encourage people say, hey, you know, why don't we just do the research, right? And then we figure out, okay, what are implications? How do we actually use it or not use it, right?
I hate to do this, but, you know, quoting Spider-Man, with great power comes great responsibility, right? Yes, that's yes. Pretty much it. And so moving on with that, I also understand that you're in works of developing a cybersecurity curriculum. Mm-hmm. Tell me about this. And you know, this is a challenging aspect, because each nation has its own understanding and levels of where cybersecurity is or what cybersecurity is all about. Talk to me about, you know, what are you trying to do here and what's the challenge?
Yeah. So, you know, because cybersecurity is really a kind of a new discipline, right? And people really don't know, okay, what is cybersecurity? If you're going to have a degree, okay, what should it cover, right? What do you teach? But good thing is, Some forward-thinking people actually got together maybe about 10 years ago, right, including IEEE and ACM and industry organizations. They got together and said, hey, you know, we're going to work together and come up with a model, right? It's for people who want to create a cybersecurity degree, you know, this is what you should cover, right? So that working group kind of had a first product a couple years ago, right? And that's kind of the baseline where a lot of the United States cybersecurity degree are following. So it's a very interdisciplinary approach, right? It's not just about coding. It's not just about hacking. It's not just about, you know, software analysis or forensic, digital forensic, but it also talk about ethics, talk about human factors, right? Talk about policy and talk about laws, right? And that's the approach that cybersecurity degree needs to go to, is that interdisciplinary approach. So I was invited to Taiwan through a Fulbright grant to help a university develop cybersecurity because they want to start a new degree. Right. So they just didn't quite have that experience. So I was there to help them develop some course materials and labs, you know, so, it, you know, hands on, it's very important part of cybersecurity. They just didn't have those lab materials. So I helped them to build up some exercise where the students can do. So that's kind of where we need to go. A very interdisciplinary approach and very hands on. Right. Not just, you know, I can score A in a test, but what do you do, right? And when you talk about cybersecurity education, most of the students instantly react, say, oh, I'm going to learn hacking, right? But that's really not the case, right? Hacking is a very small part. What the industry really need is people who can analyze problem and do proper operation and defense, and then analyze and do proper response when certain incident happen. Right, so those are the skill set the industry needs, is those, you know, postmortem digital forensic analysis, as well as real time when some incident is happening. How do you respond? How do you contain? Right, those are much harder skills than hacking. Right, and that's like you said, this is a less sexy part of the job. Right, but that's what we need to train a new. You know, group of workforce to fill that kind of gap.
And it's I guess that's the critical thinking element is, you know, applicable for almost anything.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
And I want to think about your thoughts on the big tech giants. You know, we're led by, you know, five or six, you know, big tech giants who pretty much own all our data.
Yeah.
And you know, if you're a user of any of, you know, five of their platforms, you are basically, you know, part of, you know, this data world that we're in, right? What's your take over just the monopoly that they have, that they seem to have, not just in the Western world, but, you know, around the world? It's you know, here in Malaysia as well, we're heavy Facebook users. You know, in Indonesia, Southeast Asia is one of the regions that is very open to, you know, being on social media platforms and, you know, utilizing the e-commerce sites and giving out data for, you know, whatever benefits that we're getting. What's your take on just the dominance that they have, and, you know, what's the struggle here?
Yeah, I used to work for one of them, right, for many, many years. It makes me nervous. Mm. It makes me really, really nervous. So the one big concern that I have with these kind of a monopolistic company, right, not just in technology but in healthcares and so forth, is that they often use their influence in policymakers to stifle competition, right? When they get so big, well, now they want to, you know, start some sort of regulation. People tend to think that, well, why would big company want more regulation? Well, the fact is, the more regulation, the more it favors the big company, right? And that's kind of the problem that we see on some of those names you mentioned in the United States, right? They are really heavily into influencing the policymaker so that they can maintain, you know, their power, right? And that's a very scary scenario. I always think that the power is with the people, right? Because policymakers, they're always behind anyway, right? If you think any regulation is going to fix technological problems, it never does, right? You know, if they're 10 years behind, they're lucky, right? I am a believer where people have the power, right? But they need to wake up and they need to, you know, get together and start making, you know, noises, right? And that's the only way that the company will listen, is that when the people starts to, you know, make noises and affect their bottom line, right? That's when they'll be making changes, right? And you're exactly right. Those are our data, right? But back to our earlier conversation, most people think that, well, there's nothing I can do anyway, right? So they just kind of give up. We need to kind of fix that way of thinking. In some way, it's our own problem, right? We're taking this crap, right? So why are we taking all these crap? But you know, we shouldn't, right? We should make noises, and we should say, hey, you know, we need to have our power. Why is this so difficult for me to delete my account, right? It's my account. Why is this so difficult for me to just erase something that I just uploaded, right? It shouldn't be. Those are my data, right? Sure, you're in here to make a profit, but, you know, we need to have some sort of balance between there. And I think there are certain movements that are starting to make a difference. One of the way of thinking is that it used to be the default is yes, right? If I don't say no, then people can use it, right? And the new way of thinking is that you can only use it if I say yes, right? And if I don't say yes, then you can't use it. Of course, company hates that.
Yeah. Right? No one would actually go into
that. Of course, right?
And they make it so hidden in the settings.
Yeah, but that's how it should be, right? Yeah. If you think of it, yeah, why not, right? You can only use it if I give you explicit permission to use it. So I think there's certain cultural changes are happening, but it's just happening slowly, right? But I think it really needs to come from the people to really make it worth.
The whole, you know, it all started, you know, the opting out thing. Yes. And now we got to opt in. The opting out just feel like, you know, you're letting someone to come into your house and you have to tell this person, actually, you can't come into the house, but he's already right in the house.
That's right. It makes total sense, right? But, you know,
the digital world is a weird world. But you know, so in the Western world, there's at least some conversations and discussions going on about the risk that it has. But, you know, when you look at the opposite end, let's take China for an example, and you know, with their social credit score rating that they have, they're using data for a completely different reason, and you know, they have a different opinion or an understanding of, you know, how powerful this data can actually bring to the people. Do you think we'll ever find a consensus on just, you know, where should the line be drawn in terms of using personal data? Because there are two extremes at this point of time.
Yeah, I would go back to my earlier point, right? It's whatever the people want, right? And if the people in China are putting up with this, then hey, you deserve it, right? I think we need to say, okay, this is the line, right? I don't want anything more than that. Then, you know, and you start making a difference in companies' bottom line, that's the time that they will listen. Mm. Right?
What about your thoughts on the future? And also, like, you know, where do you think we can improve as a society? Of course, the first step is the mindset, being, you know, knowing that the power lies with you, and you are the one who can make the difference. It's not the policymakers, it's not the big tech giants, because everyone has an agenda, but you yourself own the data. Besides the mindset itself, where do you think we're heading in the society?
I think there's a lot of people who are making this point, which I really like, is that we need to take more time out from technology, right? We need to have more personal interactions, right? We need to have more time to enjoy, you know, whatever it is that's surrounding us that's not virtual, right? And I really love that kind of a movement. And there's a lot of people talking about it, that especially about kids, right? Kids now growing up totally respond to the environment differently from how when we're growing up, right? And I think this is really dangerous, that they are missing a lot of those personal interaction, the environmental interaction, right, to the physical world. I think that's where we need to start thinking, okay, well, this is all great, but how do we go back to things that really matter? Is that you know, families and friends, the natures, the peace of mind, right? And we don't need to know what's happening at this second, you know, of some, you know, the Kardashians are doing, right? I think that to me is something that we can really start working on today and make a big difference, is that we need to go back to the basic. Hey, come on, just take some time out from the technology, right? Let's go camping and not have cell service, right?
We may need to do a show about what is camping in the near future, because that may be obsolete.
Right. And he said, kids said, no cell service? Okay, I'm not going.
No Wi-Fi and I'm not going.
Right.
So where do you know, what's your vision? Do you think we're, you know, closer to like the Skynets of the world, or do you think we're going to stay away from it?
Yeah, I am somewhat skeptical of those things actually materialize. Well, at least not in my lifetime, I don't think. But I think we shouldn't stay away from technology just because we have some fear or not understanding what it is really about, right? People are afraid of cloud for a long, long time. They say, I don't know what's, you know, on the cloud and who can get in, right? But hey, that's what makes you competitive, right? And there's so much benefit in using the cloud services. But if you don't really understand, you have some certain fear and you don't use it, then you become less competitive, right? Mm-hmm. We need to embrace technology for sure, you know, but we also need to make sure that we do it responsibly. That's why ethic is such an important part of computing education and cybersecurity, especially, right? Sometimes I wonder, wow, they learned this, the things that they can do, right? If they just kind of have a dark thought, then it's really scary, right? I don't think that, you know, I think there's a lot of education that we can go in to calm down the fear and paranoid and nervousness that people have about things like artificial intelligence. But we need to learn how to work together with the technology, right, and find that balance. But, you know, Skynet type of thing,
you're optimistic about the future.
Yes. Right. I'm not too worried about Skynet happening anytime soon.
Dr. Tang, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much. Just before you leave, I also understand you are the 2018-2019 Fulbright Senior Scholar.
Yes.
Tell me a little bit about this.
Great. So Fulbright program is kind of an international program where the United States State Department work with all different foreign governor to have some scholars that exchange their experiences, expertise, and to just learn more each other from each other, right? I think that their motto is a little bit more knowledge, right? A little bit more understanding, and that's, I totally believe, right? And this has been a great experience for me, and to work with a lot of the researchers in Taiwan and students in Taiwan. And I think, you know, the university here or the private industry here should totally take advantage of this program, right? Go talk to the embassy and say, hey, you know, we're looking for this kind of expert, right? Can you make open a call, right? And see if there's somebody who wants to come here and just you know, share experiences.
A little bit of knowledge doesn't hurt.
Yeah, absolutely.
Dr. Tang, it's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
And that was Dr. Chia-Chi Tang, the Associate Professor of Information Technology and Cybersecurity at Brigham Young University. And if you missed any parts of this conversation, you can download the podcast now on the BFM app. My name is Jeff Sandu, and this has been Tech Talk on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.